I don't necessarily condone this leader like emailing at 9 p.m. last night, but I did get an email at 9 p.m. last night from a leader who responded, we send these update for busy person emails that we send to the CEO periodically. And sometimes leaders read them and don't respond. And what I often see is that in the top third of teams, the leader responds, you know, in the next like 48 hours.
This is the Coleman Associate Innovation Podcast.
Innovation?
Yeah, innovation, new, original, and creative. This podcast is designed to challenge the way you think about how healthcare is delivered.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please take your seat and fasten your seatbelt.
Welcome to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast, the podcast that brings innovations and best practices in healthcare to your podcasting app. I'm Adrienne, your host, and today I'm going to be talking with Amanda and Harpreet about the behaviors that we see in organizations that produce great results. So without further ado, Harpreet and Amanda, do you want to introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name is Amanda Laramie. I am the COO of Coleman Associates. I've been with Coleman for about 11 years. And prior to working with Coleman, I worked at a women's health center as a medical assistant, as a patient advocate. I worked in fundraising, and then I was the manager of my health center.
Yeah, and I am Harpreet Sangera. I am one of the coaches, the Coleman coaches and trainers here on our team. I come from FQHC outside Sacramento, where I started at the front desk, was an MA, health center manager, and now I am doing the thing that I love the most, which is working with other health centers across the country on process improvement. And then I'm also the lead outstanding actress in our Vroom videos. So you can catch me on those, vroom.training.
You had to go there. Harpreet, of course, is that the plug for the Vroom actress. Okay, I'm in those two.
Today, we're going to be focusing on one type of improvement journey, the Coleman DPI Collaborative. But I really think that these lessons apply to organizations going through any major change. And I wanted to bring you two together because you're some of our most experienced coaches. And I want to talk about data, which you and our listeners will know is one of my favorite topics. And in any change initiative, you see that most folks produce some kind of decent result, right? If you're doing something different, you're not just doing the same old thing, you're going to produce some sort of result. But there are usually some teams, a certain percentage of teams that are way ahead of the curve and produce great results that are much better than just that sort of decent line. And I really want to tease out what we can learn from those people who produce those great results.
Now, some of you are going to glaze over while I talk about this. So give me like 45 seconds to glaze over, and then you can go back to the interesting part where Amanda and Harpreet talk. But I am seeing in the data that if you look at our top third of teams, they actually are making improvements that are 251% higher than the average, right? So they're not just doing better, they're doing way better. Let me give you an example of some of what I'm seeing. So on average, those top third of teams, they reduce their cycle time by 42%. They reduce their no-show rate by 40%. They reduce their missed ops by 82%. And they increase their patients per hour by 59%. And I should say, that's not just during the collaborative. That is what they are maintaining up until today, even after they've graduated. And so you two are some of our most experienced coaches. And I just wanted to bring you together to talk about why is that and how can people replicate that success? So what are your thoughts in hearing that data?
Well, Adrienne, I mean, first off, I know you said people might glaze over hearing that. I think those results are pretty staggering to say like a 251%, you said, 251% difference. In addition to that, I would just say we're studying that. I love that you're doing a podcast about this because as a team, we're studying that and saying, how can we get more teams to achieve that level of results? What are they doing? How can we capture it? How can we bottle it? How can they make sure they replicate it? And so our team has even started changing how we run our coaching calls to help teams replicate the same behaviors or tell leaders, like in the route of a Vroom module we're writing, what exactly can they do that the same top third teams did. So we're constantly iterating. And I love that you're doing this podcast episode to help capture that for people, because when we look at the data, it's pretty staggering. We want to make sure everyone can achieve that level.
Yeah. And just for our listeners who might not be familiar, Vroom is our online learning platform that folks can use if you want to check it out. It's at VROOM, like the sound a car makes, .training. It's not .com. If you go to vroom.com, I don't know what's going to happen. So you're on your own at that point.
Yeah. So anyway, it took us on a tangent. So Harpreet, you answer.
Yeah. I mean, similar to Amanda, blown away by those results. I mean, I will say, our team, when we're looking at data from the teams and we're discussing them and also like troubleshooting, brainstorming, coming up with ideas, you know, we think about our teams who are doing well and what are they doing? And most recently, not to keep bringing it back to Vroom, but we just put together a Vroom module on rollout, a patient visit model that, you know, teams have proven that works based off data. And I had to give it a lot of thought of like, okay, what are the things that I know from other organizations, from other teams that have been part of that success story? And first, I'd say like leadership involvement is huge. Like having your infrastructure team or the I team that many may know about, or your top leader is super involved in the spreading of your patient visit model, looking at data, responding to that data is huge. And, you know, there's the like, oh, okay, this team's doing well, or this team needs some support. But then like, what are the action steps? What are the steps that are being taken to support those teams to get them at that level of success that other teams are achieving? So I think that's the first thing I'd say is a lot of leadership involvement.
And if I can build off of that, Harpreet, I literally got an email. This leader, I don't necessarily condone this leader like emailing at 9 p.m. last night, but I did get an email at 9 p.m. last night from a leader who responded, we send these update for busy person emails that we send to the CEO periodically. And sometimes leaders read them and don't respond. And what I often see is that in the top third of teams, the leader responds, you know, in the next like 48 hours with a response and what they're concerned about. And I literally got one last night around 9 p.m. their time that was like, yes, this looks great. Thanks for the progress. Just so you know, this team, even though they're doing really well in these areas, we continue to be concerned about charting completion because we're doing really well in these areas. And we're talking at the board about how many charts are unclosed that are outstanding for this particular team. So like, heads up, glad we're making progress. I'm still concerned about this. And to me, that's a concrete example of a top third team, which is like, yep, and I'm still pushing them in this area. And even though they have fewer missed opportunities, we're still concerned about charting completion. It's a liability issue. Like, we have to have these closed. And so them getting involved, communicating with us about that, and then saying like, here's what I'm doing, which is we're pushing it at the board level when we look at results.
Yeah. And I want to make sure that we're breaking this down and being really concrete for people so that they can take some of these action items away. So if it's okay with you all, what I want to hear is basically, I know from our perspective, we need leaders to be different at different stages in the process, right? You have different jobs at each step of the process. So I wonder, can we just start with when we're first working with an organization, right? So this is either they're in the process of starting or they're like in the contemplation or action steps of starting to do some of this work. What do you need from leaders at that stage to get in this top third?
Yes. So I would say the first thing that I need from leaders is to like start spreading the word. Start talking about process improvement. Start telling the staff, everyone within the organization, what's coming, what's the journey they're about to embark on, what are like the concrete goals. I mean, if they've done goal setting with us, great. So start sharing that. What are some overall goals for patients they want to see come out of this, for their own staff that they want to see come out of this? And so it's just spreading of the message, spreading, constantly talking about it.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And even one step back when they're setting the goals, being more audacious in the goals, like setting the bar pretty high and saying like, yeah, you know, I know people can get 40-minute cycle time, but let's make it 32 because that's what I would want for my parent. So let's set that goal. And as I'm spreading the message, as you say, Harpreet, is also watching for people's reaction to that message. And if you see someone who's like, this is just a way to just, you know, see more patients, you don't really care about cycle time, like responding to that and saying, actually we do. And here's why. And that's why we set it as a goal. And so not just communicating out, but having that two-way you know, back and forth with people as they respond to the message, because that gets a dialogue going and shows how important this is.
Yes. And can I just speak to that really quick? Is the dialogue is so important. The biggest place where I've seen organizations have to backtrack is when they go in and they're sharing is, here's what our goals are, period. There is no conversation around it. There's no sharing of like why cycle time is so important, right? And so for staff who hear that and there is an opportunity to ask questions to really connect why cycle time is not only important from the patient perspective, but from the care team or the staff perspective, then you immediately have walls go up, because then it starts to sound like, well, they just want me to like get patients in and out, in and out, in and out. And there goes quality. And that's not the case. It's not the case at all. So yeah, that dialogue is super important.
And just to be clear, would you think of it as like kind of the bare minimum that folks do is like somebody sends out an email that says, here's our goals. And then there's like some teams will do a little bit better than that. And well, I mean, the real bare minimum that we see is like some people are like, oh no, this is a secret. We can't tell the staff because they're going to freak out. And that's like a reaction that people have. And then there's like doing some communication, but not making it really dialogue based. And then it's like doing a hard push of communication where every leader is talking about it with every member of the staff over and over and over again until the staff start repeating the same language.
And you see that, Adrian, like we see that come up, that like brace for impact moment during goal setting. Like you see leaders, to Amanda's point of like setting audacious goals, you see leaders hold back because they're not only just thinking about the goals, but they know they have to deliver that message. And so if they could just like, don't worry about bracing for impact and just go full speed, knowing that the goal you're setting is what you need for your organization, just not just now, but for your future, for your future of your patients.
Yeah. And so I think another concrete step is to, you know, gamify the communication, which, you know, Coleman, we've started doing by making a little elevator speech competition and have people log how many times they say what they're doing. And so that's one way we've iterated to get people spreading the message more. But you could do that internally in your organization, is be like, I'm going to count how many times I talk about it today, or have hallway conversations saying, this is not just about seeing more patients. This is actually about delivering patient-centered care that meet the needs of our community, that improve access, that value people's time. That's why we're doing this. We have to do this. Our Google reviews aren't great. They say people wait forever. Like having those conversations over and over is definitely a good starting step if we're talking chronologically.
So after leadership have set goals, they've communicated, we often teach them to a little bit kind of like get out of the way. And, you know, we think of it as having this leadership guidance plus having folks that actually do the work, do the iterating, right? And like we do this in our DPI process. You might be doing this like with a PDSA process in terms of your own organization. And what do leaders need to do to really make that PDSA or the testing process of a new model go well?
I think they need to pick the right team of people. So making sure you have the right team who you completely trust to come up with things you never even thought of, to, you know, to be autonomous, to come up with the ideas, be totally invigorated by it, like the people you would trust to do it who are great problem solvers. I also think you need to then get out of their way, but keep your eye on what they're doing. And what I mean by that is just checking in, like, what'd you do? Oh, that's awesome. I thought it'd be more wild. Like, what else did you try? What results did you get? Like, how did that work? What did patients say? Like, probing them for what the results were of what they tried and showing you're really interested and you're not going to butt in unless you see a problem, which is after a couple weeks. Like, if you butt in after 1 week and they didn't get results, that's not really fair, because it's going to take a few iterations for people to see results, and that's totally fine. But if like 4 to 5 weeks go by and you don't see any progress, absolutely butting in and being like, okay, what's not working here? Because I would have expected by this time we would have seen cycle time go down. So tell me what you're trying and maybe we can troubleshoot like doing something a little more bold to see a result for your patients.
Yeah. And if I just build off that is, from a leadership standpoint, when you're checking in with the teams, because that's what I've seen most successful, is asking, like, what do you need from us? How can we be helpful? Because often on, especially early on in the process, is teams will kind of hold back. They're not really sure where, like, what is this level of leadership support that they're going to receive? Should they not be asking for anything? And maybe it's more, okay, our leaders are checking in with us. So when leaders go in and check on the DPI team, one concrete thing you can do is ask, what do you need from us? What support do you need from your leaders? and then wait for them to respond.
Yeah. And Harpreet, I'm thinking about one organization that you worked with and coached specifically in California. I thought they did a really good job of this. But one of the questions I often get from IT members or leaders is like, what kind of stuff should we expect them to ask for?
You mean in terms of support, anything, Adrian? You mean like support, resources, all of the above, or just in support?
Well, I think this is like kind of a scary process for leaders because they're like, okay, they're going to ask for 6 more staff members, right? And that's not what we're talking about, but what are we talking about?
I think sometimes it's like, hey, do you have an extra laptop hanging around? We want to test all using laptops in terms of desktops, you know? And then instead of asking like, hey, can we buy these, saying, who has them we can use for 4 hours? If we don't have extra, can we use yours for 4 hours? Can someone who was taking them home during COVID bring it in and use it? Like resources like laptops, saying, do we have sets of walkie-talkies around? We want to try if that's a better way to communicate. We actually want to use this secure chat we've never turned on in the EHR. Could we turn it on for this session and try it? Can we alter the schedule slightly? And instead of scheduling in 15-minute increments, schedule in 10, because we're going to do 20-minute appointments. And, you know, can we change that just for our team?
I think the other common ones I see is like, what are some of the capabilities within our EMR? Like, what are the things we haven't explored? Who can we ask to ask these questions of, like, jogging is always a big one, of how can we move appointments up and down in the schedule? Who do we need to talk to? Those are some of the things that I can think of off the top of my head, of like just the things that are available that teams don't even know how to tap into until they start reaching out to leaders.
I think that's a really important point, Harpreet, of like some of that free stuff. Like some of the ones are like, actually, we need permission for like, you know, I need the front desk to be able to see something in the EMR, or I need the back office to be able to see like what's going on in the scheduling system, where, you know, there might be a history at the organization of being like, oh, people can't see that. And we're not ever talking, especially in a testing phase, don't buy everyone laptops, don't buy everyone walkie-talkies, just get like a few and try it, right? The other thing that is coming up more and more, because there's so much cool software out there, are things like interesting software that can be add-ons to EHRs, like pre-registration, two-way texting, AI jockeying things. And I think one thing that you should always know is they will almost always give you a free trial if you tell them that you're testing to see if it'll work for your organization. So go with the free trial.
Yes. And if you do, like, say someone's like, I really want to try walkie-talkies, and you're like, okay, well, I don't want to incur a cost that we don't know if it has a return on investment. Some people are like, great, I'm going to buy them here that has a 30-day return policy so that if we find they don't work, we can easily get our money back and we're not investing in something that's going to be a waste. And so that's like the last resort. If you can't find these things by like begging and borrowing and seeing what you have at home, but like, you know, the really savvy teams are like, I brought in a scale just to try this of doing vitals in the exam room. And so I had one at home and my NP had one at home and I brought them in so we could test like not stopping at the vitals station. Like I know in the future we would order a scale from medical equipment store, but for these patient visits where getting it to the pound isn't absolutely necessary, like I just brought this in from home.
And the other thing I'm thinking of is sometimes teams don't even know what they need from leaders. So one other concrete thing is, as a leader, if you're seeing your team is stuck, they're not quite sure what they need, I mean, just take it back to basics. Start tracking a patient visit during their testing process. Like it's as simple as that, of like being those outside fresh set of eyes to follow patients through their visit to see, okay, where are they getting stuck? Where is some of that non-value add time? Like, I mean, I've had many conversations with leaders where they're like, well, our cycle times are still higher. Providers are still spending 30, 40 minutes with the patient. Well, what's happening? Like, what's happening during that time? You know, obviously, you're not going to tell a provider clinically how to practice. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, like, what are some of those other resources that are available within the organization to support the provider during the visit? And so as simple as patient visit trackings, mappings can help kind of shine a flashlight and provide that level of support. Like, what else do they need that they don't know?
And for folks that want to try that, I've linked the patient visit tracking tool to the show notes, so you'll be able to see that.
And I know we've been gearing some of this to like leaders and what you can be doing. I know we mentioned like savvy teams, what they can bring in or what they can test. I really encourage teams at the beginning phase of whatever process they're going through is to just be, try like many things at once. Don't be timid and saying and being overly scientific, like we have to test each variable and just see if that variable made a difference. And I'm going to add this other variable. And like, you won't get dramatic results that way. You just have to try a lot of things. And so the savviest top third of teams try a lot of different things at once. And they were like, I don't know which one it was that made the difference, but I know that all of them combined were awesome. And patients were saying, this was great. So I'm going to keep all of them, you know, and just layer on top of it and try the most they can out of every test they'd run.
Yes. And if I could just add to that, I'm thinking of a team that currently we're working with out in New York that is not only focused on rollout, but they're also like, we don't want to stop trying things. And so they keep a list. They have a list on their wall in the, where they have their, they come together to have their work sessions just on large flip chart paper of all the things that ideas they've come up with that they don't want to lose sight of. And so they have this list. And so as they come together to plan new tests, they're looking at that list being like, okay, this is an opportunity to tackle. I know one of the items on their list is like nurse triage. We want to get rid of triage. So what can we test to really incorporate the nurse into the visit? So they just have that list in front of them that they're constantly looking at so that they come up with ideas to tackle some of those things on there.
Yeah. So once a team has done a lot of testing, the frontline folks, the leaders have been there to support, how do you advise teams to choose what they're going to roll out? Because I think that's like a process that sometimes gets skipped is we're like, we're rolling this out. And we're like, but like specifically, what are we rolling out?
So what typically happens is data is a big part of that decision-making process is first, like, does the data support that this is a proven like gold star part of the process? Your data backs it up. You've got patient feedback, right? Saying that they've noticed a positive difference in their visit. And so you start there. And then it's a conversation as an organization with leaders involved and the folks like the team members who were testing that process of, do you all agree that this is now part of your new model of care? So it starts there.
I agree with everything Harpreet said, using data for sure. And then getting some like debrief time on behalf of the team to say, okay, given what our data showed, on these days we used this, on these days we didn't, what do y'all think? I think, you know, someone saying, I think this should be part of our new model. And then weighing in on looking at the data and saying, I agree. Awesome. Then that's part of our new model. Like making sure you have a conversation about it versus just one person saying, yeah, I think this is good. We're going to roll this out.
Yes. And those folks that have worked with us will know this is like puzzle pieces or something like that. And I think one of the really important points that gets skipped in like some PDSA processes, for example, is it is just like leaders looking at the data being like, okay, we're going to roll this out. Or folks who were just on the floor without talking to leadership about like, hey, we're just going to roll this out. And it has to be that conversation of both sides about like what is actually going to work so that it suits all of us. And that's where you really get the most success for rollout. I think what seems at the time is one of the most challenging things is rolling out. And so how do you see leaders set their teams up and their organization up to be really successful at rollout?
Yeah, I think this is where their involvement, right? I know we started off talking about this, but this is where their involvement is so key. And to Amanda's point, I mean, she talked about this earlier of how we've revamped the way we talk about rollout, the way we share about what the process of rollout looks like. And this is where your leaders and your DPI team come together. But, you know, and there's an organization that I worked with in Southern California where the leaders were so involved, not with just the training process. And we'll go into that. Like they pulled everyone together to make sure they understood what's being rolled out. They like did things like put together quizzes, game shows, just had a lot of fun with it. But to make sure that everyone understood the same language, they got everyone on Vroom, right? They got everyone completing the Vroom module so that the understanding was the same. They coached these leaders, these group of leaders, it's that shoulder-to-shoulder coaching. They would be there to coach huddles, quick start, all these things. And what I was most impressed with is that they would coach, put together a summary of their coaching to share with that team of like, hey, this is what we see is working really well for you all. This is what we talked about during the coaching session. This is what we're going to follow up on. And I haven't ever seen another organization do that. Like I haven't.
Yeah, I did see another organization do something similar, which was at the end of, so they had the team themselves doing this. It wasn't necessarily coming from the coach, but they had, I think it was 19 health centers And they had every team once they rolled out, because all of them were doing this. And I would not recommend rolling out to 19 health centers at once unless you've rolled out, like, they were doing this re-rollout. So, you know, the first mistake I would see made is someone's working with one site and are like, instead of focusing that one site, I'm going to roll this out to all the sites at once. And that's absolutely a mistake because you spread yourself too thin. And even this example you're talking about, Harpreet, the one you just gave in California, I mean, even they did it at a staggered way once they were rolling out, where they were like, all our focus is here. And then after a few weeks, it's here. And they would only move on once they developed, like they had success in that first one. But anyway, this other example I'm giving was a little bit farther down the road. And basically at the end of every day, they'd ask for the site team. And often it was their leader who'd say, here was our data. Here was our top success today. Here was our top challenge. They'd send it to the C-suite and the C-suite would respond in an email that would say like, nice work today, or really nice job working in that patient who you otherwise wouldn't have seen. And like, oh, bummer about charting completion. What are you going to do to work on that tomorrow? And it would take like 30 seconds to respond to that health center with that email. But that organization was never more successful than when they were having that two-way communication, because it showed that leadership was paying attention and the team felt like this work we're doing to roll this out is getting attention. Like, this is what my leaders care about, so I'm going to keep doing it.
And I do want to say, I do think sometimes leaders tend to overthink it. Like, don't overthink this. Don't overthink the rollout process when you're rolling out a model that your team has proven that works. Like, it really is as simple as being more involved. And what that looks like is helping with the informing piece, right? Getting on every, talking about your new model that's going to be rolled out at every single meeting. It doesn't just have to be a staff meeting. Maybe it's your all provider meeting. Maybe it's at departmental meetings, in your dental meetings, your behavioral health meetings. Like, every single time there is a meeting on the calendar, give a 5-minute update. It really is as simple as that. And then once you've got the informing down, yes, you bring everyone together for these trainings and this coaching. And I think if you think about it, what tends to happen is leaders will see all this work that has to be done and maybe get a bit overwhelmed about it. And those top teams, what they do is they really break it down into like, hey, here's phase one, is we're just going to inform everyone. We're going to share, communicate all that stuff. And then we'll go into phase two and they really break it down to that level so that nothing gets missed. And then there's not this sense of, oh, this is a lot. I don't know if we can do this.
I think that's really important, Harpreet, because almost everyone feels overwhelmed when we talk about rollout. And I think that's a really common emotion. And you're right. You know, the saying of like bird by bird or day by day or step by step, just break it down to smaller steps and just move that way helps people get forward momentum versus be paralyzed in this is just too much. This is too much to roll out. And yeah, for anyone who's gone through a major life change, like moving or, you know, buying a bigger house or renting a bigger apartment or having to, I don't know, any major life event, like have a kid and being like, oh my God, it's all too much to think about what I need for that kid and what I'm going to do for childcare and what I'm going to do to feed them and what blah, 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 like whatever analogy you want to use, you know, the advice you always get is like, okay, one step at a time. And that's how we would approach this rollout thing, because it's absolutely doable if you break it into smaller pieces and you just see that the end goal is results. And that whatever piece we're checking off ultimately produces results.
Great. So then I think what actually is probably the hardest part of all of this is what behaviors do you see of these top third organizations in terms of sustainability and how they sustain change?
It's addressing the challenges head on, right? It's having those tough conversations. Like, just what I've seen is those organizations that are successful, those top third teams, they just, as uncomfortable as it can be, but they address those needed conversations. They schedule them. They have them. Whatever you want to call it, it just happens right away. They don't let it fester. It doesn't just sit there, like killing whatever momentum that the teams have.
So one example, Harpreet, that illustrates your point is a top leader who was coaching rollout at one of their sites. And they start in the morning and the provider on the team was like, no, I'm not going to huddle. And he was like, this was a defining moment for me as a coach and a leader, because I wasn't just, you know, their peer. I was their leader. And I pulled that provider aside and I said, we got to talk about this. And he did it privately. And he's like, we got to do these huddle things. Like, tell me what's going on. We have to get you bought in, and took them aside that moment versus waiting till the end of the day and just letting that go for everyone to see. It's cool if someone says we're not doing this. He did the opposite and said, no, it's not. And I'm taking you aside to talk about it.
Which is great, because you as a leader may think nobody is watching. Everybody is watching you. And everybody's watching to see what behavior you are going to allow. Because once you allow someone to be late to a huddle or choose not to huddle, then you're going to see, well, then why should I do it? What's the purpose of having me do it? Don't ask me to do it. And so just know that everybody is watching. And so this is your opportunity, again, to like really get in there, hold folks accountable to what you all have agreed to be a part of your model, puzzle piece, whatever you call it. Like, once you've agreed to it, you're going to, then it is your job as a leader to hold everybody to that. And you do it for your patients. Your patients deserve the best from everybody who works at your organization.
Yeah. And I think the counter example is, I'm thinking of a group I'm working with in the Midwest right now, who we have come back after working with them about 3 years ago, because everything, not everything, but a lot of things slipped. And what it came down to is, during the initial time that they were rolling these things out, is they said, okay, we'll make an exception for this team. And we'll make an exception for this team, not because it made sense from a patient standpoint, but because they didn't want to have the hard conversation of, we are going to provide equitable care to our patients, which means that we need to have a reasonably standardized process. And that snowballed into really negotiating away huge parts of their model. And it's interesting to watch, kind of having zoomed in with them at the beginning, zoomed out for a couple of years, and now zooming in, of that is definitely the easier way to handle it in the moment, but it's created so many problems for them later, including the teams who didn't want to do that stuff. They're still struggling with lots of the problems that they had at the beginning, right? Like, they can't get their patients in, they're not going home on time, they're using a ton of overtime, they're burnt out and stressed. And so yeah, the best thing you can do for your patients and for your staff is really to, when you find something that works, push through it, even when it's hard.
Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, when you allow shitty processes, like, your patients pay for it. They're the first ones who pay for it. And so, yeah, to your point, Adrian, is from the beginning, hold them accountable.
And I would just add, I've had a lot of those hard conversations with leaders of like, are you going to say something about this? And they're like, I'm worried because we're in a tough area and it's hard to recruit providers. And if I push on this, I might lose a provider and lose them. And that's not good patient-centered care either, to not have a provider. And so I realize that these are tough things to think about when you think that's the alternative, but you got to start with just the conversation with someone, because it may not mean someone leaving the organization because you talk to them about it. It may just mean like setting the expectation, this is why we care about this. This is why a huddle is important to patient care. You know, I'm going to ask you to try this because this is the direction our organization is going. We really want you to come with us on this journey. You know, to use a Cy Wakeman tactic, like, how bought in are you on a level of 1 to 10? What's it going to take to get you to a 10? We're your partners in this, but I need you at a 10. And having those conversations and recognizing that you're not, to have a conversation like that doesn't mean you're saying it's either this or you leave. Like, I don't think it has to go to that extreme that often leaders think it's going to go to. You're like, you're going to lose someone because you touch on that.
I think we forget, Amanda, I love that you shared that, because I think we forget that there's so much power in just having a conversation, in communication, right? Because again, to go back, we lose the message somehow, like this idea of when we share, or not the idea, but when we share the goals, or when we talk about data. I mean, data is for some people super uncomfortable, right? But when you break it down, just having a conversation of like what a cycle time means, or what patients per hour, like even talking productivity, that like the unspoken, the like, no, we don't talk about productivity on here. But it's not just about adding another patient to the schedule. What does productivity mean? It's access for patients. It's being able to plan for your day. There's so many different layers to it. And so having those conversations with staff, even starting with that before you lose them is so helpful and so important, being able to have that, again, to your point, dialogue. The other thing I wanted to mention is even thinking to that very first point of the hiring process. When you have that new model, I can't tell you how many times we share with organizations of like, okay, you've got these new workflows, new processes. When you hire staff, don't even tell them about the old way. Get them in there. Get them trained in your new way right away. It saves you from having to like undo all this training that they have of like, great, we just put you through this training process, but now we want to teach you something new within your first 6 weeks of being hired. So start there.
Yeah, I would even start with talking about like, hey, we measure cycle time. We do this because we care about patient experience. It's not to rush you, provider. It's not to rush you, MA. It's to think about where we can give patients value and making sure we're not giving too much non-value added time to patients by having them wait in the waiting room unnecessarily or whatever. Like, I would absolutely, just to build off of that, think about hiring, being really candid with, here's the data we look at. Here's why. We're a data-driven organization. Here's some of the data we would monitor. I want you to know that if you're thinking about working here, because it's not personal. It's the way we make sure we get results on behalf of our patient community.
And can I just really quick, Adrian, build on what Amanda's saying, is that data piece is so important, like tying everything to data. I think that is the other thing in terms of a concrete example is data should be part of every conversation. Every conversation you're having should be tied back to data. When you're rolling something new out, when you're having these conversations around performance, whatever it is, when you're talking about how is a team doing, this should start with data, right? It shouldn't be, oh, I think they're doing well, or they're doing well. Okay, so what are their cycle times? What's their no-show rate? How many missed opportunities do they have? Like, a top performing team will be able to like spit out the data because they know it that well. It's not about, oh, let me go find that email that had their data in it. No. A top performing team will be able to tell you right away what that team's data is, how they're doing based off that data.
Yeah. And I think there's kind of two sticking points that I just wanted to mention is, one is, you took the words out of my mouth about data. And I think part of it is painful for people at the beginning, but we always encourage folks to teach teams to track manual data. I have not seen a team be super successful in rollout without that. Have you all?
Not at all. And people bring us back because they've stopped looking at data.
Number one cause of needing a repeat visit from Coleman Associates.
Which, Adrian, if I could just like capture that in a way, you know, we all in healthcare, often we got into healthcare because we want to help people. And sometimes we think helping people is pleasing people. And sometimes that goes to staff of like, well, staff said they didn't like tracking the data, so I don't want to ask them to do something they didn't like. Then they're not going to like their job, and then they're not going to stay here. And that's the wrong call, because maybe there's a better, more efficient way to track data. And that's the response you could give of like, well, let's make some tools that make this more less cumbersome, but we're tracking data because results matter the most. Like, I think sticking to the high ground of what's going to make a difference for patients is what matters, and meaningful work for people means we're making patients' lives better. So if we say, hey, we're going to have you stop data tracking because it makes staff unhappy, well, maybe we're not connecting the dots for them about why this is important and meaningful in your job. And then the other question is, are we doing that for the people who aren't our like star performers in our organization? You know, my guess is some of your star performing organizations like seeing the data, like it, you know, they respond to that. And so think about who you're responding to when you get complaints and how you stick with what matters to drive results for patients in your community, and do that instead of just succumbing to some people griping about what's hard. And maybe make it less hard. And still do it and make it less hard.
Right. And you would never, I mean, this is such a great point, Amanda. Like, you would never make blood pressures optional. Right. If staff said, oh, I don't like taking a blood pressure, like, you would never make that optional. Right. Because I know some would say, well, it's tied to their care, Harpreet. It's tied to their care. Well, looking at cycle times, looking at access is also tied to patient care, because you can't provide care if you can't get your patients in, or if they don't want to come in because they know they're going to spend over an hour, over 90 minutes, over 2 hours waiting for their appointment, waiting to see the provider.
Yeah. And I think some of the concrete tactics I would just mention is specifically when it comes to data tracking, having done this with a lot of organizations, is it tends to go through the same flow as you see with any sort of a rollout, where it's pretty hard in the beginning. And like for 2 weeks, as long as you're doing it consistently, like people are pretty ticked about it. But then after a while, it just becomes part of the normal process. And you'll even get, like Amanda mentioned, those teams that are excited to look at their data. And if you can get through that hump from a leadership perspective, you're much better on the other side. I am a huge fan of electronic data. And let me put a caveat on that is I love it if you give your teams that are so high performing the opportunity to go to electronic data and everyone else sticks with manual data, because you can give a carrot that way. And just one final question I want to ask you all is, do you tend to see mass exoduses whenever people are firm on their rollout?
No, usually it's the people who were already on the fence and you're not sad to see go.
Okay. I want to be clear, like it's not a common experience and you've seen lots of folks do this.
No, typically the people leave are the ones who maybe weren't performing in the old system either and aren't performing in the new system and you're not super sorry to see go. I rarely see them lose their top performers as a result of a really strong rollout.
And I think, you know, folks are going to be thinking about this is like, what do you think the average percentage of staff loss is?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
I was going to say, like, generally, it's like one or two, if you're like staff members. We're not talking about like, you're going to lose all of your low performers, so you're going to lose a third of your staff, right? If most people rise to the challenge and come along, it's like a handful of people. If you're a bigger organization, it might be like 10 or something like that. But it's not a very large number by the end of it all.
Right. I would agree with that. Yes. Usually, yeah, it's one or two or a handful, to your point, Adrian. And then everyone else, I mean, you know, we talk about this all the time, is everyone changes at such a different rate. And some will just take a little longer to rise to where everyone else is. But yeah, the loss is, it's not that significant. It's not high.
Yeah. I mean, the inverse is usually true, which is if you're not holding the bar high for everyone, I tend to see more people leaving as a result of a poor rollout, inattention to results, or leadership being wishy-washy on what they're going to be doing. Then I start to hear about like someone who is amazing, who's like, yeah, I'm leaving for another job. And my first reaction is, did you go ask them why? Like, why are you losing this person you love? And if it's because they're like, yeah, because not everyone is held to the same standard I'm working at, then, you know, that's the reverse is true of, we didn't set the bar high enough and we lost our star performers.
Are there any other words of wisdom you all want to share?
Yes. Keep it simple. Start with the data, respond to that data. Watch the data, respond to the data. It's as simple as that. It really is as simple as that. That data will tell you what teams need additional training, what teams need additional coaching and support, and then where do you need to have some of those accountability conversations.
And my simple advice is for leaders, show a lot of face during rollout, like be on site during the rollout, schedule yourself to be there, watch for people coming in on time, recognize those who are doing the new process, you know, observe the huddles, coach the huddles, be there for the huddles, like just plan to be there a lot in the beginning of rollout, because then you will be needed less as rollout evolves. So be really present during that initial crucial time.
I just want to give a big thanks to Amanda and Harpreet for sharing their expertise. I love also hearing from them about like, here's all the things that we're changing to get better results for everybody. And so I hope that our listeners will take those things and really implement them in their own processes, whether if you're working with us or not. Make sure that you like and subscribe to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast so that you never miss an episode. If you or someone you know should be interviewed for an episode, just shoot us an email at notify@colemanassociates.com or reach out to us on social media. To keep up with all the CHISPA happenings, follow us on LinkedIn. I'd like to give a big shout out to Nikolai and his team for all of their podcasting help, and we'll see you next time.